decade, I've kind of tested Thomas Edison's theory about whether you actually need to sleep every night or not. And I've concluded that you do need to sleep. Some of the things I've noticed is that my hand-eye coordination is about half of what it normally is if I miss a night's sleep. And there's other things, too, that I won't mention that are very unpleasant when I miss a night's sleep. And another part of my thought process was when we had discussions on our Center Aid Plan meetings, we would discuss how we can get our membership to live healthy. And I always suggested, well, we should get them to eat their vegetables and drink more water, which I think is good. But when I read this article, I thought, well, the simplest thing would be if everybody slept 8 hours every night. That would take care of a lot of our health problems, according to the statistics. So I'm going to give you a lot of statistics from this article. And then after I've done that, I'd like to have some interaction with you on some of your habits that you have when you can't. I'd like to hear from you what you do when you can't sleep, because I think that'd be interesting for all of us. And another thing I'd like to discuss is how different our gatherings could be if everybody was fully rested. So, according to the Disease Control and Prevention, more than 80 million Americans, one-fourth of all the adults in America, are chronically sleep-deprived, meaning they sleep less than the recommended minimum of 7 hours a night. So if there's four of you on a bench, one of you is sleep-deprived. That's one-fourth. So I will give you some more statistics from this article. There's further evidence that sleep is essential for maintaining a healthy immune system, body temperature, and blood pressure. Without enough of it, we can't regulate our moods well or recover swiftly from injuries, and sleep may be more essential to us than food. Animals will die of sleep deprivation before starvation, and good sleep likely also reduces one's risk of developing dementia. A study done in mice at the University of Rochester in New York suggests that while we're awake, our neurons are packed tightly together, but when we sleep, our brain cells deflate as much as 60%, widening the spaces between them. These intercellular spaces are dumping grounds for the cell's metabolic waste, notably a substance called beta-amyloid, which disrupts communication between neurons and is closely linked to Alzheimer's. Only during sleep can spinal fluid slosh like a detergent through these broader hallways of our brain and wash the beta-amyloid away. So our brain collects things while we're awake, and it's busy thinking, processing, and then when we sleep, those cells relax and they clean out. Fatigue contributes to more than 1 million auto accidents every year, as well as to a significant number of medical errors. Even small adjustments in sleep can be problematic. The Monday after daylight savings time in the U.S., there's a 24% increase in heart attacks. So I knew there was a reason we didn't want to do that. And a jump in fatal car accidents. During our lifetimes, about a third of us will suffer from at least one diagnosable sleep disorder. They range from chronic insomnia to sleep apnea to restless leg syndrome and to much rarer and stranger conditions. There's a whole list of them. And the sleep-deprived consumers pay $66 billion a year to try to fix their problems. That figure could rise to $85 billion. So it's a major deal. Let's go on to... How many of you read this article, by the way? One brave person. So if you're one of those people who are proud of being able to fall asleep quickly, just about anywhere, you can stop gloating. Because that's actually not a good thing. It's a distinct sign, especially if you're less than 40 years old, that you are acutely sleep deprived. So the first segment of the brain that begins to fizzle when you don't get enough sleep is the prefrontal cortex, the cradle of decision-making and problem-solving. Underslept people are more irritable, moody, and irrational. Every cognitive function, to some extent, seems to be affected by sleep loss. Sleep-deprived suspects held by the police, it's been shown, will confess to anything in exchange for rest. And I thought of mothers with newborns and farmers in the middle of harvest. They give quite a bit for sleep. So anyone who regularly sleeps less than 6 hours a night has an elevated risk of depression, psychosis, and stroke. Lack of sleep is also directly tied to obesity. Without enough sleep, the stomach and other organs overproduce something. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. The hunger hormone. It overproduces the hunger hormone, causing us to eat more than we need. Proving a cause and effect relationship in these cases is challenging because you can't subject humans to the necessary experiments. But it's clear that sleeplessness undermines the whole body. And power naps don't solve the problem, nor do pharmaceuticals. There's just no good way to replace a good night's sleep. A few more statistics, then I want to hear from you. So everything we've learned about sleep has emphasized its importance to our mental and physical health. Our sleep-wake pattern is a central feature of human biology, an adaptation to life on a spinning planet. With its endless wheel of day and night, the 2017 Nobel Prize in Medicine was awarded to three scientists who in the 1980s and 90s identified the molecular clock inside our cells that aims to keep us in sync with the sun. When this circadian rhythm breaks down, recent research has shown we are at an increased risk for illness such as diabetes, heart disease, and dementia. Yet, an imbalance between lifestyle and the sun cycle has become epidemic. It seems as if we are now living in a worldwide test of the negative consequences of sleep deprivation. The average American today sleeps less than 7 hours a night, about 2 hours less than a century ago, and this is chiefly due to the proliferation of electric lights, followed by televisions, computers, and smartphones. In a restless, floodlit society, we often think of sleep as an adversary, a state depriving us of productivity and play. A full night's sleep now feels as rare and old-fashioned as a handwritten letter. We all seem to cut corners, fighting insomnia through sleeping pills, guzzling coffee to slap away our yawns, ignoring the intricate journey we're designed to take every evening. On a good night, we cycle 4 or 5 times through several stages of sleep, each with distinct qualities and purpose. So how many of you heard this, have heard or said the saying, let me sleep on it? You don't usually say, let me eat on it, for instance, or let me walk on it. So the reason we say, let me sleep on it, our brains aren't less active when we sleep, as we long thought, just differently active. Spindles, it's theorized, stimulate the cortex in such a way as to preserve recently acquired information, or perhaps also to link it to establish knowledge in our long-term memory. In sleep labs, when people have been introduced to certain new tasks, mental or physical, their spindle frequency increases that night. The more spindles they have, it seems, the better they perform the task the next day. So the strength of one's nightly spindles, some experts have suggested, may even be a predictor of general intelligence. So sleep literally makes connections that you might never have consciously formed. An idea we've all intuitively realized. The waking brain is optimized for collecting external stimuli. The sleeping brain for consolidating the information that's been collected. At night, this is, we switch from recording and editing. We switch from recording to editing, a change that can be measured on the molecular scale. We're not just rootly filling our thoughts. The sleeping brain actively creates which memories to keep and which to toss. And it doesn't necessarily choose wisely. So sometimes we wake up and we're like, oh, I just wish I could remember that. And our brain has decided that's chaff and it has to go. So, but usually it sorts fairly well and actually makes good connections while we sleep. So one other interesting thing yet. Every animal, without exception, exhibits at least a primitive form of sleep. So a three-toed sloth snoozes about 10 hours a day, a disappointing display of languor. Some fruit bats manage 15 hours a day. Little brown bats have been reported to laze for 20 hours. Giraffes sleep less than 5. Horses typically sleep part of the night standing up and part of the night lying down. Dolphins sleep one hemisphere at a time. Half of their brain sleeps while the other half is awake, allowing them to swim continuously. Great frigate birds can nap while they're gliding through the air. Nurse sharks rest on a pile on the ocean floor. Cockroaches lower their antenna while they're napping, and they're also sensitive to caffeine. So sleep, defined as a behavior marked by diminished responsiveness and reduced mobility that is easily disrupted, exists in creatures without brains at all. Jellyfish sleep, the pulsing action of their bodies noticeably slowing, and one-celled organisms such as plankton and yeast display clear cycles of activity and rest. This implies that sleep is ancient and that its original and universal function is not about organizing memories or promoting learning, but more about the preservation of life itself. It's evidently natural law that a creature, no matter the size, cannot go full throttle 24 hours a day. So, how would we look here at center if everybody had their full night's rest every night? And what do you do when you wake up at 2 in the morning and you can't sleep? I'd be interested to hear what some of you do. One interesting story I heard was that Melvin Fanny would wake up at night and she couldn't sleep, and she would fix herself hot dogs, and she'd have a hot dog feast. And I don't know if that helped her sleep, but that's what she did. I don't know what happened after the hot dogs. So, does anybody want to share what they do when they can't sleep?
I've come through about a year and a half of insomnia, and so it's been a journey to try to figure out what to do about it. One thing I discovered was that if I wake up and I start thinking, that wakes me up. So I would consciously decide to not start thinking about things that were on my mind when I went to bed. Another thing that someone explained to me was that sometimes we wake up because of how our organs are regenerating throughout the night. And so if you wake up at a specific time every night, it might have to do with that particular organ. And if you just get up, walk around, drink some water, it somehow helps your body kind of work with that. I'm not sure exactly why that is or the scientific thing behind it, but I've noticed a big difference since I've started getting a little bit of circulation going and drinking some water.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing that helped my sleep, besides just trying to just put my brain on quiet mode, was getting my room completely dark. And then the other thing that helps is, especially in the wintertime when there's limited sunshine, is to, when you get up, go to the window and look straight out and get the sun to hit your eyes first thing in the morning. And that kind of gets your brain starting to think, it's now time to wake up, and then it's more ready to shut down. So if you live in kind of if you start your morning in a dimness, then you kind of wait a little bit longer to reset your rhythm. So those are some of the things that I've learned over the years. And over the past year and a half, I would like to give God glory for I feel like I've gotten a lot of healing in the insomnia department as well.
Thank you for that. It can be very frustrating if you can't sleep.
I suppose this has happened to a lot of you, but I have discovered that with grieving, insomnia often comes with that. Something that I've read and that I often pay attention to is staying away from screens the last hour or so before I go to bed. It's from the same concept that Angela was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of tricks your brain into thinking it's daylight. If you see those bright screens, even a phone, the brightness mm-hmm. of a phone screen.
The blue light of the screen is very similar to the noonday light of the sun. According to the article, it says that our brain actually can be tricked with a bright blue light into thinking that it's not night. Go ahead.
I often read when I can't sleep, but another thing I do at times is recite Bible verses. Think about them starting with A, and often I don't get to the end of the alphabet.
Do you get halfway through before you go to sleep? No?
Maybe a little longer.
Okay. Thank you. More comments up here, Laverne.
Well, longer ago, if I were to wake up early, 2, 3, 4 o'clock or whatever, couldn't sleep, I used to worry about that because, if I don't get my sleep, how am I going to cope and how will I make it? And then I had a conversation with someone younger than I who worked the night shift, and he explained how that he would come home during the day and often he couldn't sleep. But if he would just simply sit in his recliner, sit absolutely quiet, and just rest for the hours, the amount of time that he normally would have slept, he could get up, he'd go to work, and be okay. I guess I am curious if your reading indicated what happens if the body just rests if you can't sleep. But I guess that helped kind of put me at ease and say, well, okay, if I can't sleep, it's all right. I can think, I can read, I can pray. There's things that can, that my time won't be wasted if I'm resting. Mm-hmm.
David?
Well, for me, it depends what I am staying awake about. If I'm dealing with restless leg syndrome, I take 2 ibuprofen and a glass of milk. Milk has L-tryptophan in it, and that's an important, that is a helpful sleep aid, mm-hmm. little similar to melatonin. If I'm laying awake because I'm thinking about something, I try to figure out how to shut that out of my mind. Sometimes I'm more successful than others. But like, I think, was it William or someone said that the reading mm-hmm. can help. Basically what that does for me, it makes me think something else than the thing I had been thinking about. And so those are things, along with praying, and there's different things that I do to deal with it.
In the back, Leroy.
I find that keeping my bedroom cool is really important. Cold, actually, probably to most people, with my window open. And quietness is important to sleep well for me. And if I exercise, I always sleep well. So doing actual physical exercise during the day. Relaxing and stretching and that sort of thing, I think, is helpful. And if I have a hard day, the best way for me to get so that thoughts don't keep me awake is to do a crossword puzzle. And somehow that just sort of dismisses all the other things and I can sleep well there.
Thank you. Up here, Mom.
I think that a consistent schedule is very helpful too, especially with children. I was of the opinion they should be in bed by 8, so they can wake up on their own. If you have to wake them up in the morning, they haven't gone to bed early enough. And it had a direct connection to how well they did their schoolwork, if to the amount of sleep they got. For me, I like to have 10 hours of sleep does me real well, and I usually don't have a problem getting that. If I don't drink coffee after 12 noon.
So no caffeine after lunch. Shane?
I sort of identify a little more with Edison in that I think sleep is a bit of a necessary evil. So I probably fall in the chronically deprived category and rarely have problems sleeping. But I have had a number of nights where, you know, I was super stressed about something. And frankly, it was kind of a terrifying night. And out of several of those experiences, just recognizing that I process and I think differently at night has helped me. You know, sometimes it doesn't make it less stressful at night, but I can say, you know, this will look better. This will look different mm-hmm. in the morning. And that helps me deal with that.
I can relate to you on that. So if we all got our rest. Would it look any different? Would our interactions be different? Any comments on that? John?
So we all know what it looks like for a child who doesn't have enough sleep or who's really tired. They fly off the handle, they can't handle life, and life is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And we older adults have learned some coping mechanisms for those things, but the underlying physical process is still at work. And so I find it, my main comment here is that I find it easier to be a Christian, so to speak, or a good Christian, so to speak, when I have enough sleep. And what I mean by that is I'm less irritable. I make better decisions because I'm less emotionally involved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to step back a little better. And so when I think about how that affects church life, I think the kingdom of God would be advanced, actually, by us getting more sleep or getting the minimum or a decent amount.
One of the things I thought of was our attention spans. Because if we would get our rest and we would train ourselves to have longer attention spans, we could get here and we could actually pay attention for up to an hour, you know, without needing a distraction of any sort. So that would make a service look a little different. Any other comments? Ryan.
This is fairly similar to what John shared, but I certainly find for myself that my energy to fellowship and to interact with other people is directly related to how well rested I am. And I think of that here at church. I also think of it at school, and I find that I am much, much quicker to interact with my classmates in upbuilding ways, rather than going and finding a corner by myself. If I have the energy from a good night's mm-hmm. sleep, some of that is also related to the fact that I'm at least part-time introvert, and so it takes a store of energy to interact with others. Some of you can get your half of your night's sleep by interacting, but I do definitely find that makes a difference for me.
We sat together and talked about vision as a church, and for me personally, it's hard to generate thoughts of vision if I'm not rested. I've already sat down and, you know, wanted to be introspective and think about where I am and what I'm doing and where I'm going. And if I'm too tired, then I just kind of live out of a default mode. And I do what's right in front of me and I do what has to be done. And I'm not necessarily even seeing where I'm going. Arlen?
This is almost a bit of a different track here, but I think it's related to what we're saying here, and that is that I think we do ourselves a disfavor when we don't when we don't acknowledge that we had a hard day or whatever it was, and give ourselves more time for recuperation. When we just kind of keep pushing on ahead mm-hmm. and say, well, I've got a schedule to meet and that kind of thing. I don't know, for some people that may mean more hours of sleep. For others, it may mean cutting out an activity so they can actually just vegetate or something like that. But I think I have discovered that if if I say, wait a minute, yesterday was really stressful, today I'm not going to push it as hard, you know, those kinds of things can help me kind of bounce back faster.
Any other comments? I have a couple verses yet, and then we can dismiss, and you can all go home and get your rest. Unless you have more comments. Leroy?
There's certainly that thing about sort of like don't be a baby and tough it out, and I remember thinking it was the coolest thing ever the first time I stayed up all night and talked about it and thought about it for quite a while. and there's this thing about being manly or tough or something by finding your extreme limits. And I think there's times when that's absolutely in order, but maybe a chronic kind of trying to burn the candle at both ends is probably the place where the biggest trouble happens. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that God isn't asking us to do that, and that we work hard while it's daylight, and then we absolutely correctly stop and rest, no matter what we're doing, no matter how many other things are left undone. We've done what is required of us, and we're also asked to take care of ourselves. So that's kind of the way I look at it now from my much wiser vantage point.
Well, I have to confess, I'm still doing trials on this. Just a week ago, I drove to Mississippi and back, which was a 27-hour trip, and only slept 3 hours. Which was foolish. But, you know, I thought it'd be a good idea when I left. So what can I say? This the topic is for me as much as anybody. So the verses, in the back, Tim.
I was thinking along similar lines to what Leroy just shared, and just thinking for myself, if I have an event in the evening, it's really hard to get a full night's sleep. And just to be blunt, we Mennonites are very good at evening events and packing our schedules very, very full. Mm-hmm. And we have trouble saying no to responsibilities and obligations and things like that. And so I think, kind of along the lines of what Leroy was saying, we can end up doing many, many things half as well as we could. Mm-hmm. And we can be more effective at fewer things if we take care of ourselves.
David.
If sleep scientists are right and doctors are right, we should spend approximately a third of our lifetime sleeping. And that is not foreign, though, to, I think, the principle of rest that we're taught on a more from more of a spiritual perspective. And now, God, I realize, rested the seventh day, not because he was tired, but I think he gave us an example. Mm-hmm. And but life that is not punctuated with times of reflection and rest becomes a marathon. And most of us know the consequences of that. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate your willingness to take this challenge and to help us learn even from your mistakes if we can. But I do think that it is an area that I need to grow in. I used to think that if it wouldn't be for eating and sleeping, we'd get a lot done. But the truth is that we need it, and God has designed us. to be that way, not just physically, but spiritually as well, or emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Lowell.
Might just have a couple of comments. I've been listening here. The safety factor of people who were going to drive just another 50 miles or whatever is a significant downside when that theory breaks down. Another thing, I'm not quite sure where between some of the different comments that I've heard, if you're a farmer or a hay farmer or whatever, then occasionally there will be times where it seems prudent as a steward of what God has given you to burn some midnight oil. What I have kind of consoled myself with, be it busy time, be it whatever, well, winter time will come, or the weekend, or whatever, that there are some compensating factors for a person to be the man like Leroy was, maybe, realizing that there's trade-offs and there's times when there will be kickback time and relaxing time. I'm not quite sure what the balance is between those two, but I think, I don't remember, was it Shane or someone, when a person becomes chronically sleep-deprived because of his motivation or his push, that can be very problematic.
The thing I've noticed the most is the quality of the things I'm doing. I can still do a lot of things even when I'm tired, but it's not nearly as enjoyable as if I'm doing it in a rested frame of mind. 1 Corinthians 6, 12 and 19 and 20 say, from the Good News Translation, say, someone will say, I'm allowed to do anything. Yes, but not everything is good for you. I could say that I am allowed to do anything, but I'm not going to let anything make me its slave. Don't you know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who lives in you and who is given to you by God? You do not belong to yourselves, but to God. He bought you for a price, so use your bodies for God's glory. And from Psalms yet. David says, it is useless to work so hard for a living, getting up early, going to bed late. For the Lord provides for those he loves even while they sleep. So sleep well tonight. Thank you for your interaction.